Hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
Field, the middle, double play depth, the pitch. A high drive into right center field. Going back is Bruce, still going back. Adios! Pelota! It's a three-run homer for Connor Gillespie. And they are stunned in the big city. Connor Gillespie has hit a three-run homer into the Mets bullpen, and that is a shot. And it was out of here with plenty to spare. The Giants have a 3-0 lead in the ninth.
Ah, how times have changed. Welcome to TortureCast, episode 128. It's Monday, August 3rd, 2017. I'm your host, Chad. And yes, sadly, that was probably the only real highlight from Connor Gillespie's tenure with the San Francisco Giants. But I just wanted to play that as kind of a hearkening back to... It really wasn't that long ago the Giants were on the precipice of facing the Dodgers in the NLCS, and things look
so
much, much different, 8 months ago than they do right now. And joining me from a distant 3,000 miles away is Eric Nathanson. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. It's funny, as that Connor Gillespie clip played, the Rockies and Mets are playing right now, and the Rockies hit a home run against the Mets. It was hilarious timing.
Though, they channeled Connor through.
Yeah,
through
that. I mean, I'm trying to watch any and all other baseball I can, because as we know, the Giants have not been the force to be reckoned with in the National League this year.
No, they have not, and we apologize. We've had a bit of a delay since our last podcast. We've had vacations and other things going on, and just we haven't been able to get everyone corralled together. Plus, I do all the recording, so it's kind of contingent upon my schedule. But we're back, and you know, a lot has happened over the last 3 or 2.5 weeks, however long it's been. Including that last clip. That was another reason why I played it. But yesterday, Connor Gillespie was DFA'd to make room for the young kids coming up. So I thought it would just be kind of a nice adieu to him, because he did at least provide that one valuable spark the Giants needed last year. Otherwise, they may not have ever faced the Cubs in the NLDS.
It was nice. Connor was fun because he was a guy who, you know, went away and then came back. So it was always fun for that. But he was never going to be anything more than a bench player with the Giants. So
no.
It's nice that he had a memory. You know, he could handle a fastball, and he did. So it's nice that he made a memory as a Giant, much like Ishii did. Too bad Gillespie didn't get a title out of it.
Yeah, things could have been much different if we didn't have that ninth inning meltdown related to the bullpen, which, of course, is a huge problem again this year. They thought they addressed it with Melanson and a couple others, and apparently not. Man, have we missed a lot. Not just Connor Gillespie, not just Huang. Still can't
Huang.
Get his name right. Right, or Huang.
But
we had a little bit of a trade, not as many trades as we thought were going to happen before the trade deadline. Surprisingly, Cueto and others are still with the team. But one of the purported trade baits, of course, was Eduardo Nunez, and he was, in fact, traded to the Boston Red Sox for a couple of pitching prospects, which we do not need to go into because they are nowhere near Major League ready. So we'll see what happens in the next few years to see if this deal's worth anything. But the odd thing was... Before that, Boston, of course, DFA'd their multi-million-dollar panda, which is pretty shocking. I mean, I know he was having a pretty rough go of it, don't get me wrong, but they basically they just gave up. That's it. They said, all right, we're going to just owe him the rest of the contract, the $50 million or whatever they owed him.
Give him
his
eucalyptus, yeah.
Yep, give him his eucalyptus and just get the F out. That's basically what they did. And, of course, he goes through waivers, and who picks him up? But the San Francisco Giants re-signing the Panda to a minor league deal. He has since appeared in San Jose. He is now with the AAA Sacramento River Cats. He's hit a bomb.
And
he's hitting okay.
Yeah, he's done decent. All right, so I want to pause since we haven't talked about this. We I don't want to say we ripped Pablo, but we were not kind to Pablo.
No,
after
not at
he
all.
Left for Boston, and
I was one of his defenders when they
for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. I really wanted to keep the guy. So did Willie. We were both on that bandwagon, and it, you know, didn't happen. And even though the Giants actually offered him more money, and of course, like you just mentioned, he parted ways with some parting shots against the Giants staff, except for Bochy and Hunter Pence.
So are you okay with them signing him back up since there's no risk, or are you at first? I'll say for me, I was bitter at first. I was like, you know, we don't need this guy back. But he's tried to be an adult. He's fired his agent, which was, I believe, his brother, and that's where a lot of this stuff came from. So there's some maturity there again. So I'm cool with it because, you know, it costs the Giants no money. But, you know, like at first I was very, very hesitant and I wasn't happy about it. How did you feel about him coming back?
At first, I was hesitant as well. I wasn't outraged by it. I mean, you know, you watch the internet and it's pretty fun to see the comments fly by. People who love him or people who think he's the scourge of the earth. Either way, you get both ends of the spectrum. Yeah, I definitely was somewhere in the middle to begin with. I didn't like it at first because of the way he left the Giants. I figured, well, why should the Giants give him a shot given what he did to them? But he kind of let it settle in for a couple of days. He comes back to AT&T. He apologizes profusely. Whether it's genuine or not, because he may just realize he's really messed up. And he's really screwed up his life. Oh, yeah, with $95 million. I don't know how you can screw up your life with $95 million and you're not even working for it. But that being said, he does realize he needs to make some repairs with the Giants and their fans. So he did what he had to do. He apologized. And he said some things that he didn't mean, and he asked for everyone's forgiveness. And, you know, I'll give him a half of apology for that. But in the end, like you said, it's very low risk and potential. I would never think high reward, but potential moderate reward if he gets back into playing his comfort zone. He admitted that he was very uncomfortable in Boston, also playing under the pressure of that contract. And, of course, the Boston fans and media are just ruthless. I mean, you talk about if he got upset at Bay Area media, or Bay Area fans? We're pansies out here compared to the East Coast.
Pussycats, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, absolutely. So I think he felt the wrath out there. He had his injuries. He had his weight issues. He wasn't performing. And then it just piles and piles and piles on top of him. And I think he is a sensitive person, which has been shown. And he collapsed under that pressure. So I think there's a possibility, not a great one, that he may come back here and be a decent player. You know, nothing like he did 4 or 5 years ago, but you know, if he can come up and hit 260 to 280 and you know, hit 10 to 15 a year. Now, I'm saying all this as a full season average. I don't think he's actually ever going to play a full season with the Giants. And I mean getting his 500 at-bats because of all the youth movement coming up. I think there's too much of that. Also with your Arroyos and your Joneses and others, I don't think he's really going to have a spot here in the next couple of years. But it'll be fun to see what happens here. I think he is going to be called up in the next week or two, and he'll split time with Jones at third, who was just called up yesterday when Gillespie was DFA'd. So I don't know. It's an interesting experiment, very low risk, and we'll see what happens.
Well, okay, so you mentioned Nunez, who it's funny. We're talking third baseman. He had to replace Pablo over there as the Giants' best candidate for a trade. They didn't make any other moves beside that. I personally didn't have a problem with that. Cueto, he's a little hurt. It happens. There's nothing you can do about it. And there's no other real assets that you wanted to trade away. I know people have been yelling for, like, Denard Span, possibly, and maybe even Pence or Samardzija. But, like, I was okay with the Giants standing pat at the trade deadline. I didn't think they had to be sellers for the sake of sellers. So I was pretty good with what they did this trade deadline, not doing much. I mean, were you okay to see that they didn't do anything? Would you have liked to have seen them go after talent, or is that more for the offseason?
If Cueto had not been hurt, I probably would have been a little upset if they didn't trade Cueto. And the reason I say that is because it's possible his market value would have been there in the offseason if he had not been injured. So I would think the chances would be a little bit higher than they are now that he would opt out for a better contract. Where they stand now because of his injury and now because of his secondary setback with forearm tightness that he experienced in San Jose a couple of nights ago, and he's going to get shut down for quite a while here, I think there's very little chance he's going to opt out. I don't think he's going to get a better offer for what he has remaining on his contract with the Giants. And so I think that means he's with the Giants next year. And I think if he can get healthy again and be back to the Cueto he was in 2016, I think that's a great thing for the Giants.
I do too. I think Cueto's second round's fine. But then again, if next year turns out like this year, I think he'll be looking for the door as well.
Yeah. So do you know with his opt-out? I know it was opt-out after 2 years. Is it opt-out every year thereafter? Or
no,
what?
It's just this year, right?
Okay.
Yeah, it's just this year. Which made sense with the way the Giants were rolling at the last few years, their winning organization. So if they fell off a cliff like they did this year, that was, you know, exactly perfect time for him to build it in. But, you know, he didn't shoot himself in the foot, but stuff happens.
Stuff happens.
There's not much you can do about it. Like, there was murmurs of, like, Giancarlo Stanton and things like that. But those are, like, off-season moves. Those are if they're going to move money around and things like that. And the Giants aren't going to make trades just to make trades. There's no need to shake up a team that's 35 games back.
No, there's really no reason to do that. I know they had whispers about Samardzija as well. And there actually was a trade. It was confirmed by Bobby Evans. There was a trade at least talked to with the Angels for Joe Panik, which was interesting. He was on KNBR, and they were talking about that, and they asked him, they said, hey, there's rumors that there was at least a trade discussed with the Angels for Joe Panik. So can you tell us a little bit more than that? How close was that? And he said, we did have a discussion, but I can't really say we were really close because we actually had numerous discussions with numerous players and numerous teams, but they just kind of start with, hey, would you give me $5 for $300? It's like, just because you have a discussion doesn't mean that it's in the realm of possibilities, was his point. So there were numerous teams that approached, probably for even Buster Posey and Madison Bumgarner, for all I know. But the terms of the proposed trade were probably so preposterous, it just never even materialized into any kind of discussion. So, but he did confirm that was one that kind of got down the road a little bit, which, you know, he's a valuable player. He's one of the core players. I would not like to see him go, and I don't think they could get a ton for a Joe Panik. I really don't. Only because he's not a superstar. He's a solid player, but I think he's young and durable, except when he gets concussions, which is a freak thing. And yep. I think they need to hold on to their core. So I like you, I don't really have a problem with them not pulling the trigger on anything else because – I don't think anything else was of super value, it sounds like. And certainly a guy like Samardzija, despite his track record for eating innings and for his control, that's great. But the production still isn't there in the sense of his runs, right? I mean, he's still allowing too many gopher balls. He's still allowing too many hits.
He can strike out as many as he wants and walk as few as he wants. But if he still gives up 4, 5, 6 runs... Doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, I'd rather have a guy strike out 3 per 9 and walk 6 per 9 if he had an ERA under 4. You know, I'll take that.
Yep.
Bottom line is fewer runs, so even if it's a little more stressful sometimes. But since the trade, Eduardo Nunez is fitting right into Boston. The Red Sox fans are loving him right now. It's short attention span theater here, but he is 11 for 22 with 2 bombs and 9 RBIs, including a couple of walk-offs. It's been pretty fun to see. Getting baby powder in his eyes and what have you. But he did say that he loves San Francisco, and there's rumors that, you know, they may talk about a reunion in November. So we could see him back next year, which could complicate things in the sense of seeing how Pablo does and Jones does and if Arroyo is going to be ready for next year.
Well, it's with the trade deadline, you know, being what it was, you bring up the youth movement and it's starting. The Giants had their discussions yesterday, I believe it was, before the game to kind of see which direction they were going. And you said it, there's been all sorts of moves since then. And it looks like they're going in they're going to let some of the kids play.
They are. And in fact, Bochy was mentioning that they definitely are going youth movement right now, but not as much as they would have liked to have because, of course, Beattie and Arroyo are hurt, and they're not going to play the rest of this year. So by all accounts, the Giants, if everyone was healthy, would have been full in to the youth movement. I mean, we're talking things that we haven't seen in more than 10 years with this team. It's really unusual, but that's what happens. When you're a team that's completely out of it, you have nothing to lose. You have a bunch of old players hanging around at the end. That's what you do. You see what these guys can do against major league talent. And that helps you set the stage for the next year or two. Certainly helps you think about your off-season moves and acquisitions because you get a longer sample size of what these guys can do for 2 months against major league pitching for the most part. I mean, in September you have your call-up, so you do get some AAA competition. But, you know, you still have the arena of Major League Baseball. So Ryder Jones was called up. He'll be playing third. And then, of course, Jarrett Parker, after a shoulder injury early in April, is ready to go after his stint in AAA in rehab. So we got those guys up. It looks like Matt Cain hasn't been confirmed yet. He did do a spot start for Johnny Cueto last weekend, but they were asking Bochy if he was going to start this Saturday, which would have been his normal spot or Cueto's spot in the rotation, and Bochy couldn't confirm or deny that. And the rumor has it, because they might go youth movement, they would be starting, I'm sorry, what's his face? I'm blanking out on his
name. Albert Suarez?
Yeah, no. Albert Suarez. Not Albert. Is it Albert?
No.
No, that's the old guy. The other Suarez.
Yeah, that is. I'm looking back. I have the transaction.
We get go open. Confused with all
Albert,
of our
yeah,
Suarez.
It is
Albert.
Suarez.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
So he's like, what, 25 years old or something. So there's a rumor that they may start him, and it's possible that we may have seen Matt Cain's last start in a Giants uniform. We said that before he got another start, so I think he's still going to have another one or two, I think. He'll just find his way back in.
Well, I mean, with this kind of a season, as long as he's still on the big club come September, you remember Barry Zito started a game. So
Yeah.
He's done. I can absolutely see Matt Cain getting another home start towards the end of this season.
I think he'll get another one just for the sake of getting another one in front of the home crowd, because they'll set it up just like they did with Barry Zito against the Padres. Remember that? And he had a standing ovation send-off. Everyone knew this was his last appearance in a Giants uniform. So I think we're going to see that. And it's sad to see it happen, but he's the longest tenured Giant, signed with the team, and he made the big club in 2005. That's
yeah,
a
he
long
played
time,
with,
man.
He played with Barry Bonds.
He played with Barry for three seasons, too.
Yep.
5, 6, and 7. I mean, yeah, yep. It's a pretty amazing link back into the past. And they were reviewing some of his stats. He's the second in all-time wins as far as the San Francisco club is concerned, not including New York, behind Marichal. He's third in strikeouts behind Marichal and Lincecum. He's second in innings pitch behind Marichal. You go down the list, and this guy has firmly established himself as one of the great San Francisco Giant pitchers of all time. And I think that's great. That's nothing to shake a stick at. I think he can be proud of his career. It's sad in the sense of he's still young. You don't expect this kind of production decline at his age from where he was at.
He came in earlier than a lot of guys do, though. I was just thinking to myself, I saw him pitch at Wrigley, and I haven't been to Chicago in 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, so he came up early. He excelled earlier than a lot would. So I think that's, probably part of it. Who knows? Maybe he'll be a bullpen guy. Maybe he'll be out of the game. But he is literally one of the all-time greatest Giants pitchers. And that's a cool fact that he can hang his hat on.
No one can deny that. Yeah, 3 World Series championships. Perfect game. Started an All-Star game in 2012. Pitched a couple of amazing postseason games. So he's done more than his fair share for the Giants. Just unfortunately,
yeah, he was the starting pitcher in every clincher in 12.
Yeah, he man, talk about the things he's seen. Anyone could envy his position. So good for Matt Cain, but sadly, this will probably be his last 2 months in a Giants uniform. All right. So what else? I didn't have a whole lot, just because we had so much to cover, and I don't want to rehash everything that happened 2 weeks ago, except for Pablo. But Johnny Cueto, which we mentioned briefly, he did have a rehab start in San Jose, and he was pulled after 33 or 34 pitches due to forearm tightness, and I didn't think anything of it. But in his post-game interview, or a couple days later, I should say, he was being interviewed, and he said, quote, "The difference is this time it's not as painful as 2015. He was referring to an injury he had a couple years ago. "Of course I was scared. I felt the pinch, and first thing I thought was, oh my God, am I going to have Tommy John here?" I mean, he's admitting that he's even thinking Tommy John right when he feels it. That's kind of a scary thing.
Yeah.
But he added that if the Giants were in postseason contention, quote, "then I would go ahead and fight through it and put up with the pain," end quote. So I don't know where it stands right now. Clearly, he's not pitching anytime soon. But what do you think is going to happen, Eric? Do you think that's it? He's done for the year, period? Or do you think he's going to have a little more rehab time, even though the minor leagues are almost over. They only got a couple weeks left. So
that's why I think he's done for the year.
Yeah,
there's no reason to really stretch him out, and it's become apparent, like we said, to him and to the Giants that he's probably not going to opt out.
Yeah,
and I think the Giants' mindset is if Cueto wants to opt out and look for better money somewhere else, fine. Then that's what he was about. But if he wants to just rehab and get better and take another run at it next year with this team, they'd be more than happy to have him. So, yeah. You know, it comes down to that. It's shuffled. We had the Giants had such a, not a solid rotation, but a set rotation early on. And now, you know, with the decline of Matt Moore, Smarja getting hit all the time, you know, Ty Block doing what he can, you know, it's been a bit of a shuffle now. And it's been part of why they keep losing. They've hung into some of these games, but it's not helping them at all. And having Cueto shut it down, it gives them another chance to look at younger players. It's amazing how everything circles back to the youth movement we have ahead for the next 2 months.
This is not a position that, as fans, we are used to.
And right.
A lot of fans are like, it's about effing time, guys. You've been doing so well for, you know, 8 years or whatever it's been.
Yeah, but those fans aren't listening to the podcast, you know?
No, they're not. Why would they? Right, why would they?
For other teams. You know, they're happy to see it happen. You know, it's time for and the Giants are not the type of team that's going to sit on their hands. You know, with how good the Dodgers are and seeing how well the Rockies and the D-backs have been playing, the Giants aren't going to do like a three-year rebuild. You know, they came out and said this, that they plan on going for it again in 2018. And now going for it again doesn't necessarily mean, you know, we're going to put together a World Series club at the beginning of the year, but it's putting together a talented club that's going to contend, and then you see what parts you have to add as the season goes on. You know, and I think that's why Cueto sticks around, because the youth movement will give them a chance to see which few pieces fit in to maybe do it next year. You know, we had a kid like Austin Slater playing a wonderful left field, and he got hurt. Who knows if, like, Parker comes back and supplants Pence in right field, or, you know, takes over the left field job finally. Any of those things can happen, you know, going forward, because there's not much to – we can't really cheer for spoilers because the Dodgers are so far in front. You know, there's not much as a Giants fan to – it sounds horrible, but there's not much to cheer for this year. Like, there's no real huge personal milestones. It's just kind of wait, watch, and see what happens.
Yeah, that's really all it's about. And now with the youth movement, I'm fine with it. You know, unfortunately, the Giants are on pace to lose 101 games at this moment. And whether it be with their regular starters or the youth movement, I don't think there's going to be too much of a difference in the win-loss record. So it's like, just throw the youth out there. I mean, clearly I don't want the Giants to hit that century mark. It's just a number. But there's just something about it. They've only lost 100 games once in their Giants history, right? And they've only had 2 or 3 years in their New York and San Francisco Giants history where they've had worse winning percentages than they do right now. So it'd be a historic season if they lose 100 or 101 games, and it's sad, but if it happens, it happens, and I guess that would be more of an incentive for Bobby Evans and company to. I know, like you said, it's not a rebuild. It's funny, you think 100 loss team, it's got to be a rebuild, but
yeah.
It just on paper, you look at their core and you're like, the core isn't that bad. Their starting staff is not that bad. The problem is that you had the injury to Bumgarner. You had, you know, career down years for guys like Crawford and Pence and Matt Moore. I don't know what happened to him. Shark, despite all of the great stats, is still getting hit like crazy. The bullpen has been atrocious, just absolutely atrocious. And you mentioned the Dodgers. You know, that was a key. That was really a microcosm of their entire season. All three games the Giants could have won. All three. They were in every single one, and they lost every single one because of their bullpen, specifically that last game where they had two leads, one in the ninth and one in the 11th, and their bullpen just blew it both times. So, and even against the A's the other night against Matt Cain, who didn't deserve to lose, he actually pitched quite well after the first inning.
Yeah, I was going to say afterwards he settled down good.
Yeah, he settled down. He had 2 runs in 5 innings, so it was fine. It was okay. It looked a lot worse than that, or it was going to be a lot worse than that.
Yeah, but guys that we were talking about at the beginning of the season, like Derek Law, we have Will Smith injuries. No, he's not. And he's getting hammered in AAA, too.
Yeah.
Like, nobody grabbed the roles that were supposed to be grabbed. You know, I mean, though Bochy says he's going to put guys like Crick in high leverage situations, and then we still see, you know, not Crick getting beat. Right. But, you know, it's that's the hard thing about it is if nobody steps up to grab it, it's going to continue to be a heel, and it is. I mean, you're right. Every single Dodgers game they were in, and they had a chance, and the starting pitcher, I mean, Bumgarner threw one hell of a game Sunday night. It was his best start.
He wanted that start.
Yeah, it was his best start all year.
He told Bochy, I want to pitch in L.A., and Bochy gave it to him, moved him up a day, and he was awesome. Seven innings, three hits, no runs. He was on fire, and obviously he was in line for the win once again. They blew it in the ninth, and he didn't get the win at all. Really, really frustrating to watch this team. And I'm just, in a way, it's almost good that they're not in contention right now, because that series would have just crushed our hearts. Like right now, it's like, oh, that stinks. But you're not crushed. You're just like, okay, the season's just getting worse. But man, if they were in contention or fighting with the Dodgers, that would have just been just a ball buster.
Games like that, I'm like, why did I sit here all night? Yeah. You know, it's that kind of feeling. But, like, you know, I mentioned Bumgarner and, you know, bright spots to look for. If Bumgarner gets back to Bumgarner form and he looked to be that way Sunday night, you know, that's something we get to look for over the next couple months. Mm-hmm. You know, make sure Bumgarner stays in pitching shape. You know, it's one of the things, the bright spots. You know, Buster Posey, maybe Belt hitting 25 home runs. You know, different things that we didn't have. It felt good to have Bum on the mound. You know,
yeah,
he finally won a game.
Yeah.
Right. His start before that, he got the win.
It was the first
time any team he pitched on this season won, be it the Giants, be it his rehab minor league starts. That was the first time the team, not him getting a win, the team won the game.
Mm-hmm.
So
I include his San Jose starts. Yeah, his Fresno or Sacramento start. And then, of course, before that, the Giants were 0-6 in Bumgarner's starts.
Yep. So, I mean, it's this season's left for those kind of things, you know. Yeah. So hopefully Bum can show that he's back, because he was lining up for a huge payday and all sorts of things. And it'd be nice that the Giants know that, you know, he's going to be the Hall of Fame caliber pitcher going forward.
Yeah. So it's, again, the core on paper looks good, but with the decline from key positions this year, you have no idea what's in store next year. It could be just as bad or worse, or there's other guys like a Buster Posey that could start hitting downhill. Who knows? I mean, they need to bolster quite a few holes, including left field and the bullpen and third base, and it goes on from there. Certainly another quality starter.
So what's your – I hate to be a downer, but I was just thinking about it, and it's a guy we've barely named. But what's your biggest disappointment for the season? Like, what player just did not play up to potential at all that you thought he would?
When you really look at the cavernous gap between expectation and reality, because there's so many players that you could say were underperforming. So you can write a whole list. But as far as the biggest gap, I would say, between where I expected them and actuality is probably Matt Moore. That's probably one of the main guys that comes to mind. I mean, certainly Hunter Pence is up there, you know, hitting 238 and stuff. But to me, a guy hitting 238 instead of 268 is not as big as a guy who I thought was going to have like a 4.25 ERA versus a 5.7 or wherever he is. Just like, it's like the gap is just wider. There's very few starts he goes out there and I feel confident. Shark is up there too, only because of his production. He's also he's in the high fours right now, isn't he? I think he's 4.9 or something like that.
I think so. I have it right
here. Yeah, I think he's somewhere around there.
4.7.
Okay, I'm not going to count injuries because that just happens, obviously. Yeah, wow. You know, a Brandon Belt, though, even though his average is low, his power numbers are way up. His on-base percentage is up, which is contributes to the production. Brandon Crawford is another guy that has been disappointing because he's hitting like 229 or something. I mean, a number that I wouldn't have fathomed of given his last 3 years. But ironically, he's leading the team in RBI, so... You know,
yeah,
it's one of those things.
That one throws me for a loop, too. No, I came into that question, Hunter Pence, Hunter Pence, Hunter Pence, in my mind, and then you made this perfect case for Matt Moore. because I do. I think I'm kind of with you. The gap from where I thought he would be into where he actually was is bigger than Pence. Pence is starting to worry me, though, because next year is the last year on his contract, and I'm not sure that they're going to want to keep him out there as a regular, everyday right field role. I think they're going to be auditioning guys, and he's going to lose at-bats over the next 2 months.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I said 238. He's actually 243. He has 8 bombs and 45 RBI, but that is not the production they expected out of a guy they're paying this much money to.
None of the homers are at home.
And that's right. He has 0 home runs at home. Absolutely right, which is just, it's mind-blowing. And, oh, this is another thing they were asking Bobby Evans about. They didn't really nail him. I think they were trying to be kind to him about, but it was almost like reading between the lines, like, hey, Bobby Evans, you said this whole Parker Williamson thing was going to be fine. It was going to solve left field, and we don't need a big left fielder. Clearly that didn't work. They said it in some other nicer terms, but like, how are you going to pursue left field this year? And then also combining that with the fact that you're having such a horrible year and the fact that AT&T Park is one of the hardest stadiums to hit home runs in. It's really hard to attract a premier power hitter because they know their numbers are going to suffer here. And given the fact that maybe they don't think the Giants are going to be World Series contenders in 18, how do you do that? How do you track someone out here? And, you know, Bobby Evans gave the company line and, well, I don't really think that the park has much to do with it. I understand on the surface fans may think that. I think he was just BSing everyone. Because I do think a guy who takes pride in his power numbers, you know, hitting 30 to 40 home runs a year, who's a free agent, probably is not going to want to come to San Francisco, being all things equal. There's something else is going to have to attract him. And so
not a right-handed power hitter. I mean, I wouldn't want to be.
Correct. You're right. Right-handed is probably a little bit harder. Although Brandon Crawford did finally come out and suggest that he does agree that Triple's Alley needs to be shortened. So
they should put like a patio out there or something like that.
But, you know, he's a left-hander, and how many has he hit to that 421 sign that have either died and gotten caught or, you know, died for triples that would have been home runs anywhere else, so...
It happens to Belt all the time, too.
That's all the time.
That's where he gets robbed in his numbers. I don't know. You know, it is hard to, but I see a guy like, you know, a right-handed power hitter might think to themselves, well, you know, people say it can't be done. Screw that. Right. I'm going to make it be done. But then, you know, 3 months in, you don't want the guy going like, damn it, what did I sign this contract for?
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, it is the company line he gave us. I don't agree. I think people are shy. I mean, when was the last right-handed power hitter the Giants had? Reggie Sanders, Moises
Alou? You have to
go back to,
you know, El Gato Grande. I mean, you have to go back to these guys. Ellis Burks. But, you know, they started their careers at Candlestick, so it's kind of like it transitioned into AT&T. So it kind of wasn't a known at that time.
Yeah, that's
why
I think
guys
of, like,
who started
Reggie
at AT&T. Yeah, there's not too many.
I mean, the left field's been a hole since Bonds left, so, you know, that's been tough to, you know, it's really truly kind of amazing to think about how the Giants have won 3 World Series when there's been so many holes that they've just patched along the way. You know, as a fan, it just makes me stand back in awe sometimes of how lucky we've been to get these great times, because we see it now. You know, there's other teams like that are immediately, I hate to use the Cubs as an example, but like a guy goes down, they bring a new guy up, and, you know, right away this guy's in there contributing. You know, the Giants haven't had that for a long time.
A very long time. Now we got to count our blessings. Like you said, you know, until last year, it was 3 playoffs, 3 World Series championships. You look at a team like the Dodgers, you know, they're about to win their 5th title in a row, Western title. They've won 4 in a row prior to this year, and they haven't even reached the World Series.
Right.
You know, they could have won 3 or 4 World Series by now too, if things went their way. But yeah, we're gonna close up here pretty soon on this episode of the TorchCast. But one thing I did want to talk about, which we did briefly already, is the Dodgers. Their historic season is just, to be honest, it's out of this world from an objective baseball point of view. Removing the rivalry and the hatred towards those boys in blue, you have to respect what this team has done this year and what Dave Roberts has, you know, how he's commandeered this team. They have had some bolts of lightning like Bellinger's and others that have come up out of nowhere to just be superstars that they did not expect, nor did they have any of this kind of performance in the lower leagues. So sometimes it takes something like that for a team to succeed. But they're above any normal level of success. They're still on pace for like 112 wins or something ridiculous like
that.
Yeah,
some ridiculous, because they've won 9 straight again after they won like 11 straight last week. They were at 38 wins in 44 games, which is one game better than the 1951 Giants were down the stretch to catch the Dodgers in that historic season. So they're like on fire at a historic pace.
They're playing like an elite NBA team.
Yes.
As far as their winning percentage.
Yes.
That's what it is. Maybe not quite the Warriors, but almost. That's how good they have been. Teams don't win at this clip in baseball. Baseball, no. You're a good team if you play 600 ball. If you win 6 out of 10, you're a really good team. They're winning like 8 or 85 out of 100 in terms of their last, 3 months or 2 months, whatever it's been. A very protracted stretch. It's been absolutely incredible. So, I mean, hey, look, all the kudos to the Dodgers. They're clearly running away with the division. The Rockies and the Diamondbacks look like they're going to duke it out in the wild card because they have a pretty decent lead in that realm as well. But I don't know. It just, unless history changes, it just seems like the Dodgers are setting themselves up for failure again, which I think as Giants fans, we're all really hoping for. They get into the NLDS or the NLCS and just take a nosedive, just like they always have.
That's the thing with this year. I mean, as an objective baseball person and somebody who's watched a lot of Dodgers games over the last few years, this is the best team they've ever had. It really is. I mean, the record shows it, but like watching a game, you never feel like this Dodgers team is out of it. And they showed it this past weekend against the Giants by winning all those games late. You just never feel – you feel like they're going to be able to get a couple guys on and then one of their guys are going to come through and that their bullpen will keep it. I'm not so sure they're going to fall flat on their face this year. And I'm also not sure which is better for the rivalry, the Dodgers winning it finally or them falling on their flat on their face. Because if the Dodgers win it, it gives the Giants that much more incentive to keep going for it.
Yeah, I still don't want that.
Yeah, well, I'm not. I don't dispute that. I don't want that either. But I do. I think that the Dodgers and the Cubs are the two best in the NL, and they're going to fight it out again for the NLCS.
I don't have these stats. Oh yeah, they're way better, and I wouldn't be surprised if they win the World Series this year. They're clearly the dominant team. It would have to take another team just catching fire at the right time, or I know Kershaw's been out for a little bit, but if he comes back for the playoffs, him stinking it up, Ryu, or they just acquired Yu Darvish. Something like this, just taking a tank, their offense shutting down, whatever. It happens, as we all know, in the playoffs. The Mariners in 2001 won 116 games, set the modern Major League record for wins, and lost in the first round. So, I mean, this stuff happens in short series, so it wouldn't be surprising or shocking. It would be surprising, not shocking. The other thing that the Dodgers have done, I don't have the stats in front of me, and I may get them a little off, but I know that as of a couple of days ago, in which they were trailing the Giants, I think it was game 2 of that series. Maybe it may have been game 3. But they had two stats that were amazing to me. One, the Dodgers were like 17-17 in games in which they trailed at any point, which was by far the best of any record, I guess, in the major leagues, which was incredible. Another one was, it was at the time, this was more than a week ago, so I don't know if the streak is still going, but they had won 47 consecutive games in which they had the lead. And what that means is that in 47 consecutive games that they had the lead, they didn't lose that lead eventually at the end of the game. Meaning once they get a lead, they're pretty much a lock to win the game. Unlike the Giants, I mean, hell, twice in the Dodgers series, they had a lead and lost both games. So, I mean, It goes to show you, the Dodgers are not just superior, but they're also superior in every way, including not only putting their foot down on their opponent's throat, but also coming back. I mean, not just against the Giants, but it seems like every other night there's a highlight of Bellinger hitting a 3-run home run in the 8th to take the lead, or a grand slam to tie the game, or just something crazy that they just keep doing. I mean, it is a magical year in L.A., and it just, it sucks to see as a Giants fan, but it has to happen to them at some point. And I guess it's happening.
They're 20-3 since July 4th, and all three losses came against the Braves.
20-3.
That's ridiculous.
There's your NBA level. I know. It's just God. Come on.
This is the best record in the National League through 107 games since the 1944 St. Louis Cardinals. They've won 40 of 47 since June 7th. Wow. I'm in the Dodgers notes now. I had to find out. best 47-game stretch in franchise history, mm-hmm. and tied for the best 47-game stretch in Major League history. Wow.
Yeah. Going 20-3, that's like playing an opponent in an LCS or World Series five times and still not having lost four games.
Yeah.
And winning all five. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like, you win four games, you haven't lost three. You win another four games, you still haven't lost three. You win another four games, you still haven't lost three. You win another four games, you still haven't lost three. Oh, and here we go, number five. We've won another four games, we've only lost three. Crazy.
That's ridiculous. The fun thing is I'll say this, it is fun for the fan side of the rivalry and the Twitter side of it. I see plenty of talk go back and forth between the Giants and Dodgers fans, especially when they were playing this weekend. And I love it because the Giants fans can still hold over the Dodgers fans. Even if you look at all-time total titles, not just the last three titles, mm-hmm. the Giants still have the edge. Right, the Giants still have the edge over the Dodgers. So, you know, I love that the trash talk is still out there, and I hope that up until if they win the title, Giants fans are tormenting Dodgers fans to the end.
I know. I had a friend on Facebook. He's a Dodgers fan from L.A., and he posted on my wall the record and 33.5 games back. Then I posted back just an image of three of our three World Series trophies, right? And then he comes back, and he goes, oh, that's getting so tired. The Dodgers have more World Series trophies anyway, total. And I said, no, actually, it's 8-6 Giants.
Yep.
And he just kept digging himself a hole. And then he's like, okay, well, don't they have more in L.A. than in San Francisco? I said, okay, if you want to split hairs, yeah, they got 5 in L.A. and they have 3 in San Francisco. Ooh!
Like, right?
There you go, buddy. Oh, by the way, most of those happened before both of us were born in terms of the LA ones.
And oh, by the way, the last one was 29 years ago. So
yeah, the last one was 1988. So let's just, if you want to be proud of that, go right ahead. Go ahead, buddy. If that's what you want to hold on to.
I mean, that's anyway, what Dodgers fans have. Kirk Gibson pumping his fist is the last huge memory Dodgers fans have of a world title team. And Giants fans, we've got so many things. You know, we've got Edgar Renteria's home run. We've got Pablo's three-run homer game. We've got Lincecum. We've got, you know, Matt Cain, like we talked about. We got Sergio striking out Cabrera. We've mm-hmm. got a game 7. We've got Bumgarner. I mean, look at all those moments that we have to list off, and all they have is Kirk
Gibson.
It's too
many.
In the last
they have Kirk Gibson. Pretty much it.
Yeah, so I'm all for the trash talk. Until they win it all, like, all that other stuff doesn't mean anything. And even if they win it all, we'll take it on the chin for a little bit, but still
we will.
Remind Dodgers fans.
It'll still be, you know, Giants will still be up, but yeah, the Dodgers look like they're going to be good for years to come, so the Giants definitely need to pay attention to that, and Brass needs to turn it around. So coming up for the Giants, they do have one more against the A's tonight at AT&T. We'll see if they can split the series, and then they're home against the D-backs and the Cubs before they go on the road next week to Washington. So unfortunately, I can't cover any of these games coming up. It's been a real hard year for me to get to the stadium. I'll be out at sea for a week for work, but hopefully in August and September, I'm actually going to hit a few games, you know, when they don't count. So
you're going to watch the youth movement.
But
get
it
excited,
may be
Sarah.
Fun if I can go and get some time with some of the young guys. Because the thing I've found with the veterans, you know, they don't always want to talk to you, especially I would presume in a season like this. I've never really been around that during a down year, but the young guys are always willing to talk because they're young, they're fresh. They're like, oh, yeah, I'll talk whatever you want. You know, I'll do whatever. So I think, you know, the chances of getting those guys for a couple of minutes are pretty high coming into the future. So look for that. Willie and Ben couldn't join us again tonight or today, I should say, where it's an odd recording time because of our schedule or my schedule coming up. But you can follow them individually at Willie Dills and at Fried Duck. You can follow me at ChadK21 and Eric at 2OutHits. That's with the number 2. You can follow us collectively. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I want to let all the people that do come and follow me on Twitter, it'll be back to Giants mostly next week. all the fish
stuff. Yeah,
you've
been on a fish frenzy.
Oh, my God. I don't know if people know, my favorite band is playing at Madison Square Garden 13 nights over 17 days. So I've been live streaming and hanging out with those friends, you know, at night. So all those stupid fluffhead and all that stuff that's been going through your timeline will stop very, very soon. And I promise it'll be pretty much Giants baseball.
That's awesome. All right. You can follow us collectively at TortureCast and, of course, like us on Facebook. I guess that's it for episode 128. You have anything else, Eric? Anything you want to pimp? No, that's
nope.
It. Yeah, I don't have any Etsy stores or sex slave trades I need to let you all know about. I think I
have an Etsy store, but I'm not going to pimp it here. Everybody can find us another way.
There you go. All right. Well, thanks for joining us for episode 128. We'll see you next time for 129. For Eric, this is Chad King signing off. We'll see you next time. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.